I'm really excited to be part of this panel because we talk about this data all the time. So we have another great panel for you. I think you're going to hear the passion from these people as well. So this session is called Using Data to Understand Community Context. And if you've watched any of the videos, any of the webinars that we have on overdose fatality reviews, you'll hear one of the speakers at least talk about understanding the community context. We think it's really important that you're grounding your OFRs in the community and the community context. So we have four panelists that I think are going to provide a great amount of information, diverse information. The first panelist is DJ Gehring, who is one of the public health analysts in Kansas. I guess the first grantee, his Alabama University is the first grantee for the drug data research solicitation that BJA put out a couple of years ago, so excited to hear from him. And then finally we get to hear from Laura Kolar from CDC, who's the health equity specialist. So why is this important? What we've done, I have to give a little plug to our data system, the data system for OFRs. There is a section within the data system that allows you as an OFR to capture this community context information. There's two sections. One is based on the community health rankings. So there you can capture information on race, ethnicity, poverty, housing, education, all of those kinds of things. But then there's also the environmental scan that allows you to really look at your community and look at things that are like do you have a quick response team? Is there deflection going on in your community? So you can really understand what's going on in your community and use that community context to help drive your solutions and drive the cases that you might want to review as an overdose fatality review. So with that, I will turn it over to DJ, who will be our first speaker.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. All right, so I'm going to talk about some of the things that we're doing in Kansas to incorporate social determinants of health and health equity data into our overdose fatality review process. So while I have this federal acknowledgement up, a little bit about me. So as mentioned, I am the public health analyst in the state of Kansas under the overdose response strategy. And I started out in HIV surveillance for the last couple of years. I've been in this role as a PHA, and we've been working on public health and public safety partnerships to improve part of our process throughout the state of Kansas to reduce overdoses. So Jessica already touched on what the overdose response strategy is. But there is a QR code there if you want to look at who the public health analysts and the drug intelligence officers are within your region. So going into the overdose fatality review process, we have what's called an equity tool right now. And part of the process for this is to learn which social determinants of health contribute to the risks of a fatal overdose. We want to address lack of access to treatment recovery systems and other types of resources. And we also want to compile some of the social determinants of health data to justify some of our decisions and allocate appropriate resources. We also want to identify more of the upstream approaches rather than the downstream approaches by using some of this information. So currently, this is what the tool looks like, trying to get more and more data to expand throughout many other states that have been interested in this process. We have a few different layer selections that you can use or pull up within the map. Some of this includes law enforcement structures, public health, health departments, naloxone sites or harm reduction sites, substance use treatment centers, and then some census tract demographic or socioeconomic information. And so there is a legend. You can see on the kind of the top part of this tool, there's many different options and tools that you can also use. And as you select throughout the different layers, that legend does change. And then we have the add sites to the map. This is due to the lack of access or the lack of data provided to know who is a treatment provider and where the harm reduction resources are. We can bulk import these, so if you had an Excel file with all of your MAT or treatment providers or where your naloxone resources are, we're able to bulk import that into the map, and it does update automatically. And then we have a resources tab that we're building. If you know of different resources that can go on here, or national resources, you can email me, and I'm happy to put those up as well. And so the first part of this tool is the nearby function. And this, you'll enter in the decedent's address, and then it pulls up how close resources are to where the decedent lives. So you can see under this one, and this, we just picked a random address on here. But the closest MAT provider is more than a mile and a half away for someone that doesn't have a car or within walking distance to the resource that can be difficult for them to get to. And then we have the infographic component, and this is where the social determinants of health data will come in. But you can enter in the address, and then you get a buffer choice that looks like this. You can select a ring, you can do a drive time or a walk time. It's really up to you and how you see best fit. But within this address, you can see the resources that were within a 15-minute walk time. There's also an infographic available that will tell you where the five closest resources are for each layer selection on there. And then you get the infographic that pops up. So we really tried to be intentional about what socioeconomic data we were putting on this, making sure that it was relevant to the OFRs. This is still changing. We're still constantly gathering feedback in order to improve the infographic. But you can see at the top left, there's also an opportunity to change the walk time. So you can do 10, 15, or 20-minute walk time and change the infographic based on that. And then we have the second page here. Well, let me go back a little bit. So part of what we've done recently in the OFR is really focus on this front page, and that's due to the insurance rates, Spanish speaking, and then the struggling with healthcare costs. We've also looked at some economic hardships, like the percentage of income that's being spent on the rent or the mortgage. And depending on the case, it's really operated quite differently. This has been the focal point for a lot of cases that we didn't have much information on. And we did talk a little bit more about upstream approaches, how we can get face-to-face with people within specific neighborhoods that maybe match similar demographics over time, and that we collected. And then for cases that have a lot of information, this seems to really be a supplement to the information that we already have. For instance, we had a case, someone with a long history of mental health issues and alcoholism, and so we really were able to dive into some of the neighborhood and environmental factors within that person in that space and realize that the demographics of the person and what he was going through was very similar to the neighborhood as a whole. On the second page, you get a little bit more information about race, ethnicity. You get an age pyramid, so you can see how the population stacks up with the rest of the county or the state. There are selections on here, so you can see the comparison right now is to the county, which is selected as Reno County, but you can change that to compare it to the state or the national level as well. And then you can export these. So you can see that there's no identifying information as at the top of the infographic. It just says that it's within a 15-minute walk time. It doesn't provide the census tract. It doesn't provide the address of the individual. So you can export this as an image, a PDF, an Excel file. You can also do a dynamic HTML if you want it to be interactive for the group. And then you can add your own data, CSV files, Excel files, shape files, anything that may be able to go into a geospatial map, you can add data to. But it also allows you to access some of the publicly available data that's already on the Esri ArcGIS platform. We did this at one point with hepatitis A data because we saw an increase in hepatitis A among meth users, and so we put that data in to kind of see how it stacked up with where the overdoses were occurring. And here's what a cumulative review looks like when we print it out. So we have the infographic, and then we have a separate sheet that prints out as well that will give you the exact mileage away from the closest resources. So for this one, within a 15-minute walk time, there is a residential treatment, but it's male only. And in a 20-minute walk time, there's a mental health and a health department available. And you can see that the federally qualified health center is more than 3 miles away. And we've seen this consistently pop up in our OFRs that our FQHC tends to be really far away from where most of the overdoses are happening. And so some of the things that we're trying to address are systems changes. So what neighborhood-based initiatives or programming can we implement to help reduce overdoses? And we speak about this being culturally relevant, so making sure that it matches the populations that we're trying to do outreach to. And we speak a lot about that during our OFR processes. We also want to address the root causes. How do we uplift individuals? How do we change environmental factors to decrease the risk of an overdose? And then we want to make sure that we're engaging people who use drugs and empowering disadvantaged communities through civic engagement. So one of the data points on there is how actively involved is the community through the civic engagement process. This doesn't just include voting, but it includes attending town halls, writing elected officials, calling people, really giving people a voice and a chance to advocate for themselves. So there are some limitations to the tool as of right now. You do need the community analyst or business analyst attachment to the GIS platform in order to pull the infographics. We're trying to get around this by at least developing a census tract level infographic throughout. Right now it's kind of on a county by county basis where we have these infographics available. And then some of the analysis features require ArcGIS Online or ArcGIS Pro to do. When you do import your own data, it does not stay there. Like, it deletes as soon as you refresh it, so it's not being housed. So there's no concern there. Once you import it, it's really up to you whether or not you save it to your own GIS platform, but it doesn't save to the tool itself. So here's my contact information and a link to my LinkedIn if you want to connect on there. I'm happy to answer any questions and answer any emails, but the ORS program as a whole, a lot of us PHAs and DIOs were able to help you through this process. So reach out to your local PHA DIO, reach out to me, I'm happy to connect you. Thanks.
All right, good morning, everyone. My name is Sonia Burdall, and I'm a public health advisor with CDC's Division of Overdose Prevention. You would have thought Mallory and I worked together, but we didn't, because I want to start off by contextualizing this idea of community also within the SOS process. I didn't know the history of where SOS came from. What comes to mind for me personally is the song SOS by the wonderful ABBA, but my second favorite application of SOS is overdose fatality reviews and the public health and safety framework, both which are complementary frameworks that follow this same SOS process. So understanding community context is one piece of the first goal of SOS, developing a shared understanding. FAST, which is public health and safety teams, I'm gonna say FAST, goes into depth about the type of learning that a multi-sector team can take on in order to achieve this first goal. There are three areas of learning that can help your team to develop a shared understanding. Learning about overdose-related topics, such as substance use disorders, treatment, harm reduction principles, and stigma, and more. Learning about the partners on your team, what services they provide, experiences and expertise that they have, and how these services and partners work together, or are siloed within your community. And finally, learning about your specific community context, which is what I'll be focusing on for the rest of the presentation. Data to understand community context, in this case, refers to all types of information. For example, when I say data, I'm talking about aggregate data sets, case reviews from OFRs, qualitative feedback from overdose prevention program participants, drug supply testing from a lab or a drug checking program, and more. All types of data are important to understanding the specific community context in which your OFRs and your overdose prevention efforts exist. There are an abundance of measures in each unique community that are important to gather and understand. The first are overdose indicators and risk factors, which I think are what most people think of. For example, what are the fatal and non-fatal rates of overdose? What is the community prevalence of drug use? How many people are unstably housed or don't have health insurance? And what are emerging drug supply trends? Then there's understanding relevant policies. How is the Good Samaritan law in your community understood by law enforcement and the public? Are certain harm reduction supplies criminalized? Next, what services are available and where are there gaps? What available harm reduction services are available and where can people access them? What is the number of treatment beds available in your community and how does insurance impact their accessibility? And there's more things to consider, like local events, tourism, and even weather. Does your city have an annual music festival or spring break tourism? Does cold weather make people isolated during a certain time of the year? Since each community is so unique, having diverse partners at the table is one important piece of figuring out what all you need to measure and understand to establish this shared understanding. In addition, I'm going to go through some tools next that were developed to help teams explore potential sources of data to develop your community context. First is the FAST data inventory table. This tool provides a list of key investigation questions and offers a structured approach to helping partners assess current data availability and identify the next steps for obtaining, sharing, and using local data. This is a great tool to use as a team so you have a live document that's tracking what data you are using and what other organizations you may need to partner with. FAST also has some supplemental tools, including a basic drug use epidemiology guide. The guide provides an overview of overdose and substance use indicators, data investigation questions, suggestions on how to secure, analyze, and stratify your data, possible data sources to consider, examples and references to get more information. The guide has 14 key indicators, including but not limited to the percent of population with substance use disorders, emerging trends in the local drug supply, and the number of syndromic emergency department visits related to suspected overdose. Now, this EPI guide is themed to public health and public safety partnerships, but CDC and the CDC Foundation currently have a project to explore overdose prevention indicators in general. Currently, there are no common set of standardized indicators to monitor and track progress of overdose prevention strategies. And so to address this need, this program aims to identify indicators to evaluate the impact of overdose prevention work and to develop and disseminate tools to support communities to collect, monitor, and evaluate performance indicators and then use that data for program improvement. The project team conducted a feasibility assessment with local health departments to identify already available data sources and seek feedback on the proposed indicators and resources. The most common data accessed by the surveyed health departments were coroner or medical examiner data, emergency department syndromic surveillance, vital records, and naloxone dispensing or distribution data. The least common accessed were electronic health records data, court system, and jail or prison data. The project is still ongoing, so if this interests you and you want to learn more, pay attention to the CDC Foundation blog for more information or email any questions you have to that email address, opindicators@cdcfoundation.org. There are many publicly available data sets that you can access to support developing this community context. I'm going to list through very quickly some of the relevant sources. But each one of these databases could have their own hour-long presentation done by experts who are not me. So this is also not an exhaustive list, but my goal for this next piece is for folks who maybe haven't considered these sources to just be aware they exist and know where to go for more information. And what's available at the national scale, it might be a helpful place to start. But to establish a nuanced local level shared understanding, you know, partnerships and data will still also need to take place. Data sharing, excuse me, just like in your overdose fatality reviews. CDC has two overdose data dashboards. DOSE, the non-fatal drug overdose dashboard, is updated monthly with data that comes from electronic health record information in syndromic surveillance systems. SUDRS, provides data on drug overdose deaths collected from death certificates and medical examiner or coroner reports. The National EMS Information System, or NEMSIS, has a dashboard that tracks suspected non-fatal drug overdose events in the pre-hospital care setting using nationally submitted emergency medical services data. The National Community-Based Naloxone Finder from the National Harm Reduction Coalition is intended for people who use drugs to access free naloxone in their community. Next Distro has a program for people who use drugs to access naloxone by mail, in addition to state-specific resource pages for obtaining naloxone. NASEN, the North American Syringe Exchange Network, has an online directory and interactive map of syringe service programs in the United States, U.S. Virgin Islands, and Puerto Rico. The Overdose Mapping and Application Program, or ODMAP, provides a near real-time suspected overdose surveillance data to support efforts in mobilizing immediate response to a spike in overdose events. There are new ODMAP features to allow the overlay of social determinants of health indicators on the maps. The Social Vulnerability Index is a tool that uses U.S. Census data to determine the social vulnerability of every census tract. The intended use of the interactive map is to help communities be better prepared for disasters or disease outbreaks. The SVI ranks each tract on 16 social factors that are grouped into four categories: socioeconomic status, household characteristics, racial and ethnic minority status, and housing type and transportation. I'm going to go back now to the piece of understanding community context that is about knowing what services are available and where there are gaps. This information can be gathered through activities like a resource inventory and by organizations sharing with the group what services they provide. One critical perspective to seek out and to understand in order to prioritize service gaps is from people who interact with these services. People who have experienced an overdose, have a substance use disorder, or use drugs. Your shared understanding is not complete nor accurate without this perspective. The National Association of City and County Health Officials put together a suite of tools that supplement the FAST toolkit. One of these activities is the Participatory Methods Matrix. This resource helps members learn about data collection methods that center on engaging the community through participatory methods. Participatory approaches to data collection are ones that are more interactive in nature and engage people with lived experience. This tool has examples of data collection tools that can be used to promote community engagement and advance equity. Tools provided include accessible, culturally responsive, and low-cost options for gathering community input. To establish a shared understanding of the local overdose crisis, multi-sector teams can engage in learning about overdose, community context, and their partners at the table. Specifically, community context will be informed by many and multiple relevant measures. Think outside the box about what makes your community unique. National data sets can be a starting point, but there is much more nuanced data available at the state and local level that you can access through your partnerships. One of the primary purposes of the overdose response strategy is to facilitate this data sharing. So it's already been plugged multiple times this morning, but reach out to your ORS team, because that's a good route for obtaining more nuanced and locally relevant data. And finally, consider participatory methods of data collection that are more interactive in order to gauge perspectives of people with lived and living experience. Lots of the resources I talked about can be found at FAST.org. And this presentation is mine, not necessarily a position of CDC. Thanks, everyone.
It's always great when somebody sets you up really well for your talk, so thank you for that. It's really awesome to be in this room. I'm not part of an OFR team, and so I look out and I just see a bunch of superheroes. And like, I'm just like the guy in the back with the data who's like trying to help y'all out. So it's really great here and to be here and talk to y'all about this. Especially coming from Alabama, I didn't have to come that far. Like we share pollen season. So I'm Dr. Josh Iyer, and I'm here to talk to y'all today about the Southern Regional Drug Data Research Center. I'm really excited to tell you about it. I followed directions well, so I included the slides that you guys had to fill out as OFRs. I'm from Tuscaloosa. And my goal is greater access to improve drug data intelligence for a broad group of stakeholders. That's y'all. All right, so this is the team that we have at Alabama. It's a fantastic team. Our private investigator team is a principal investigator team is across the top. Y'all are in the investigators. We're just PIs. Yeah, and so like the thing I'll just say about them is they're a statistician, a GIS researcher, and a computer scientist. Right, so what we're really bringing to the table here is a group that's gonna focus on modeling and using advanced statistical methods to really figure out some new ideas for y'all. In addition to giving you a whole bunch of information, all the information you just heard from public sources, from a lot of different public sources, like the take-home messages, we're trying to pull those together into a single place for y'all. I'm there at the bottom, Dr. Josh Iyer. I'm a clinical health psychologist by training, and my program manager is actually in the back. Hi, Hala. So, and she's a resident of Atlanta, so that's part of how she's here. But we have an awesome team down there. You'll see a couple of tech experts and our data scientist, Amanda Cox, who's fantastic. Okay, so DDRC is focused on helping with a really big problem. Opioid response efforts must be data-driven, y'all know that, but opioid data itself is also often siloed in different locations, very difficult to access, difficult to link up, and restricted in detail and information by the time you get it, and as a result, it tends to be pretty limited in value for your use. I see a lot of heads nodding to that, right? Like, we deal with those same problems with the DDRC, but we're trying to make those problems less for y'all. So the BJA put this out in 2022. The idea was to develop a drug data research center serving a region of the US, make it accessible, and teach people how to use and replicate it. This was our initial region. You can see that it's the Southeast, funded by BJA, $3.5 million, 3 years, and that was the original footprint, but then we got permission to expand our footprint. So, we are now covering a third of the states along the southern portion of the United States, and the idea is to bring in public data for those that crosses borders. How many of y'all are from one of those states? Awesome. So that's the good news. Y'all make sure you talk to me. There's a new funded regional center that is for about a third of the Northeast over to Chicago. So if you're from one of those states, look out for that. Lori Ann Post at Northwestern is developing that. She's a recent grantee. Okay, so we had four objectives. Establish a drug data repository that includes data from the key member states to produce and disseminate web-based, real-time, actionable, multi-sector drug data. That is ambitious, right? We're aiming for that. We're gonna see how close we can get. Number two, develop resources for other regions proactively wanting to build field knowledge and capacity in drug misuse and abuse by creating a regional DDRC. Number three, promote the analytic human capital among stakeholders in the government workforce community and other sectors involved in investigations to combat drug misuse and abuse. And four, develop and implement a systemic research protocol for the DDRC so that research scholars can conduct policy-relevant analyses using stakeholder data to assist in combating drug misuse. So the number one thing I want y'all to see there is it didn't stop with number one, right? We're not just bringing a bunch of data together and then saying, we did it. A big part of what we're doing is figuring out how to make that data useful to you. And in order to do that, I need to hear from you. So we're gonna have analysts that help respond to specific requests. We're gonna have information on our website that helps you to understand how to use data, how to report data, what it can do for you. And we're gonna be helping lots of stakeholders across the community, but I'm talking to y'all. Y'all are the stakeholders that I'm focused on today. And then the last thing that we're gonna do is help researchers to actually do some in-depth analyses using this. And one of the really interesting things that the center is going to do is it's going to facilitate that ability to bring in social determinants of health and social context to understand what's happening with the opioid crisis beyond just crime numbers. Okay, so this is where we are right now. It's an update of the different public data sources that we've brought in. And we used the graphic to help you understand what the resolution is. We aim for county level and month level for everything. Obviously, we can't get that for a lot of things, so this is how we're stepping back from that. But you'll see a lot of the public data sources that Sonia called out are there. There's more that we're looking for, so this is just where we are right now. And we're targeting specifically, we really went into this targeting specific types of demographic factor of variables. So demographic factors, socio-demographic factors, drug-related medical data, crime data, health outcomes, social determinants of health, risk and protective factors, comorbid health conditions, and economic data. So we got a strategy for filling each of those. And you can see like the value immediately with that is that it's a rich data set that will allow you to ask deep questions about what's happening with opioids in your communities. So security is important. I put this up here so that y'all can understand we have also a security strategy. The main thing I'll show you on the right is that we've got those different ways that we're trying to get information out. The top one is website and public reports. That's public access data on demand, right? So I'm going to show you the prototype of the website that we're going to use to give you that. The next level is web form data requests, which is where you can request specific data about your community for us and we'll work it. And then the third one is those special contracted requests where we'll have to probably work through some permissions with the data holders. Okay, so that's what I just told you. So this is the prototype. You'll see our region there. And the way we're setting it up is you can click what your main outcome is and then say, choose that and the year. And as different metrics are added in, we'll have them to where you can see them. And one of the things that is obviously a problem, you know this if you've done any sort of like data collection for rural areas, like there's lots of suppression, lots of data is not available because it's small in data. So we're figuring out strategies around that by grouping areas, grouping by time period, using estimates that exist in other places. So seeing what we can do to get around that. This would be looking at the state and then going down to the county level. And then these are metrics that we have as an example of some of the metrics that would pull up if you click on your county. So how many of you are anywhere near a state border? How many of you have really good data about what's happening on the other side of the state border? Right? You see why this is valuable going across the region? Like that is one of the big things that we can do. And then building from that, we can also model what happened with the opioid epidemic across the state boundaries. So what happened along interstate corridors or shipping lanes? So there's lots of information that hasn't really been out there for y'all that we'll be able to start pulling in. And so we expect the impact of this to be really great. Unprecedented access to comprehensive data center for anybody who's a stakeholder who's interested. High value interconnection of multi-factor data sets. New capacity to visualize multi-state regions and patterns. Increased insight through regional data-driven intelligence. High-level regional strategy network for public sector responses, so like not just modeling stuff across the states, but then getting the states involved in what that means. Special research opportunities, stronger relationship with regional groups and leaders, and new resources for the creation of data centers. So that's me bringing all this information. I have an ask, though. When you see me, I want you to be thinking about what we can do to answer an important question for you that you haven't been able to get the answer to. And I'm here for the next 2 days. When you see me, grab me and say, here's what we need. Because we're at a place where we can really start focusing in on making sure that BJA is getting its money worth, for one thing. But making sure y'all are getting the answers you need. All right, that's my information. Thank you so much for this time.
All right, I gotta move it down. I'm a little short, you guys. So we're almost there. We're getting close. And I dare say we might even end a little bit early for this session, have extra time for lunch. So let's get a move on. So thanks everybody for having me today. I wanna thank the National Forum on Overdose Fatality Review for bringing all of us together and having this opportunity to talk to each other, to learn from each other, and really to best support the peoples most disproportionately impacted by overdose through data and the OFR process. Some may call this health equity. Some may call this addressing social determinants of health, and there could be many other names. What it comes down to, though, is that we are learning more through the OFR process, implementing change to save lives or save souls, as we heard earlier, in the future. So before we move on, I want to take a step back and acknowledge the Muscogee Creek and Cherokee Nations, whose indigenous lands house our CDC and ATSDR campuses here, and also whose ancestral lands we're on right now. I identify as an Asian woman using she, her pronouns, and I have black hair, it's in a ponytail today, and glasses. I'm wearing a black jacket, a neon pink and black dress. It has pockets, everybody. Love the pockets. And if you see me around today, please stop and say hello. I would love to learn more about you and your role in saving lives. And I don't mean that lightly. We all have a role to play to address overdose in our communities. While tragic that lives are lost, we know there is much to learn through overdose fatality reviews, or we wouldn't be here. We wouldn't be gathered to learn more. These data tell stories, and we can learn from these stories, and maybe more importantly, we can learn from each other. So for the next part, I just want to get an idea of who each of you are. So if you feel comfortable, raise your hand. I have a couple of questions. They're not hard. So in thinking about what you know about social determinants of health or health equity, how would you consider yourself? And there's only three options: a beginner, somewhere in the middle, or an expert. So again, thinking about what you know about social determinants of health or health equity, would you consider yourself a beginner? Maybe somewhere in the middle? Maybe an expert? A few experts out here. I bet there's a few more. So in thinking about what you know about how overdose affects your community, would you consider yourself a beginner? A beginner? Somewhere in the middle? Any experts about your own community? I would think there might be a few more, but that's okay. That's okay, we're here to learn too. So thanks for sharing. I see a lot of people who are like, oh, I'm somewhere in the middle. Maybe we're a little afraid to say, oh yeah, I'm definitely this, or maybe we're afraid, I don't know if I'm a beginner, or maybe we just didn't want to raise hands, and all of that is okay. But I'm here to tell you, and you may have heard this before, we're all experts in our own knowledge, in our own ways. That also means we can be experts about the data. I'm not just talking about how we analyze it or getting into the fancy statistics or the fancy data systems and combining them, because we have other experts for that. But we have experts, we have our own expertise in how the data tells stories, how those data impact our communities, and how we can use that data to find solutions. So for me here today, as a senior health scientist or a health equity officer in CDC in the Division of Overdose Prevention, you may think I'm an expert. And my knowledge and skills certainly helped me earn my position today. But I want to recognize, and I do recognize, and I want to share with you externally right now, I have a lot to learn. I know I have a lot to learn. I can learn everything every single day from each one of you. So I might be able to tell you a lot of the history of Asian immigrants in the United States and maybe know a lot from my own story, but I cannot tell you what it is like to live and know the stories of growing up in Asian communities. I don't know what it's like to do that around San Francisco or in another part of the country. I honestly can't even tell you what it's like to grow up in an Asian family because I'm adopted. I have the Midwest, German, a little bit of rural, and a little bit of 313 covered here, you guys. So if you want that, I'm here. But I have a lot to learn from everybody else. So now that we've established that each of you know your communities are experts in that perspective, so we could have all raised hands, but it's fine again, we're all here to learn. One of the beauties of working toward a thriving community and addressing social determinants of health is that we can learn, we can make mistakes, and keep on trying. And as you heard from Grant earlier, the vision of having a healthy and thriving community free from overdose is there. So we've talked briefly about this, and now I want to switch gears a little bit. So in my career, I've made a lot of amazing connections to fields I would have never thought of myself going into. And not to call people out, but we have our justice colleagues here. That is one field I was like, not for me. Glad people do it. Thankful people do it. But that is definitely not for me. So while I have learned a lot about how the justice system works, how law enforcement agencies work in collaboration with each other, and how cross-sectoral collaborations and partnerships can be extremely successful because of the expertise that each of these sectors, each of these agencies, each of you bring to the table, I have also learned that one of the best ways to work in diverse groups that you can, and I'm sure that you do use in OFRs, is to ask questions. Asking questions help us learn to understand data from different perspectives. So we're experts in our own ways, and we bring together a diverse group of experts in review teams, and one of the best opportunities to learn from each other is to listen and ask questions. So there may be times, or many times, where asking questions can help resolve an unknown issue, a challenge. For example, does anyone out there know what a hotspot is from law enforcement? We got a few people. That's great. So for those that may need a quick refresher, these are often areas that have a high number of crimes in a specific geographic area. Knowing where crime is obviously helps law enforcement better deploy their resources. And while it turns out that the public doesn't always like being called a hotspot, and this was a leading point of friction, a leading challenge in a past partnership that I was involved in. And by simply asking the question, well, what might be a better term? What do you prefer? We were able to move forward and learn together and really talk about the data. And better, we were able to talk about the solutions and implement them. The term, you guys, was areas of concern. Simple, simple word change. So asking questions can, of course, help clarify and understand, and it can help move a group forward through conflict, through those challenging conversations that can derail a partnership and derail the review process. So now that we know we're all experts, we can use questions to help our teams move forward. What does this have to do with our work? Well, by being here, we are all engaging in gaining knowledge to build those thriving communities that are addressing disproportional impacts of overdose. You've heard me mention social determinants of health or the conditions in which people are born, grow, work, live, and age that may influence risk in communities. And in better understanding the data through, or the social determinants of health data about our communities, we can implement better solutions and create those collaborations for opportunities, bringing new sectors together, bringing new groups together. There are gaps and there are opportunities to improve. We know that. That's an established fact. So later today, I'm going to join Rose Heffron and Courtney Yarlahar to talk more about advancing health equity through OFRs. And one of these, to give you a preview and kind of think about data and what it means and how we can reinterpret it and understand it, is that an interesting data fact. Did you all know that racial misclassification in Washington fatal overdose data underestimated American Indian and Alaska Native Washington deaths by about 40%? This is a simple tool that we have available to us. These are simple solutions that we can talk to our communities, talk to our data experts, talk to others to improve and save lives. So this story is not unique. There's many like it. So we're here to uncover these data gaps and tell these stories and learn from them to create that better future. So all of the experts in this room, we're asking questions, and we're working toward that thriving community. So I look forward to joining everybody in continuing my learning and hoping that you'll share with me best practices and efforts that are successful for your communities. And thank you. We're early for lunch.
Okay, was that not a great panel? Let's give them a round. So I thought I'm just gonna recap for you. What I loved about this panel was that we got to hear from a local perspective and an ORS partner. How do you pull this data together at the local level? Then we were able to hear, what is the national data? What are the data sets that we should be thinking about? How do we take that national data and look for it locally? And how do we use that local data? And then we heard about, how do you look at this from a regional perspective? And what's on the horizon for all of you in this room to potentially tap into the resources that will be available in almost two-thirds of the country with the Drug Data Research Center network that's being created? And then finally, we got to hear from our expert on health equity and hear about what's coming and how you can be participating in the next listening session so we can actually hear from all of you thinking about how do we incorporate health equity into our OFRs? How do we incorporate that lens into the work that we're all doing? So, thank you all. Wonderful.